Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. Our program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Every day, we bring you news and information about America and the world. This is what you will hear on our program. On our Making of a Nation series, you will hear more about American history. Brian Lynn brings us a report on education. But first, this report. The recent United States missile strikes against Syria could increase pressure on North Korea to give up its nuclear weapons. Or the missile strikes could show North Korean officials the need for nuclear arms to keep the country safe from attack. The United States, France, and Britain fired 105 missiles at three suspected chemical weapons factories in Syria early Saturday. The Allies said they acted to answer a reported chemical weapons attack in the Syrian city of Douma. The attack killed at least 40 people and wounded or sickened hundreds of others. The Syrian government has repeatedly denied any use of chemical weapons. The raid on Syria comes as U.S. and North Korean officials are preparing for talks in late May or early June. They are working on plans for a meeting between U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. U.S. officials want the North to discuss plans for ending its nuclear activities. North Korea is expected to demand security guarantees from the U.S. government. Observers say Trump's decision to use force against Syria can be seen to support his maximum pressure campaign message. For the U.S. side, that means sanctions against North Korea, including a ban on most North Korean exports. In addition, the U.S. would take military action against the North if necessary. The goal is to force Kim to end his nuclear program and the continued development of a nuclear-armed intercontinental ballistic missile, one that could reach North America. On Monday, a South Korean newspaper, the Korea Joongang Daily, called the U.S. attack on Syria a warning for Pyongyang. It said that the North Korean leader must end his country's nuclear program or face the same kind of airstrike. U.S. officials hope the show of force in Syria will increase pressure on North Korea to offer meaningful nuclear proposals at the leaders' meeting. The Trump administration will not be satisfied unless the North suspends at least some of its nuclear and missile activities, said Pong Yong-shik. He studies politics at the Yonsei University Institute for North Korean Studies in Seoul. But the U.S. military strike on Syria could also increase concerns in North Korea that giving up its nuclear arms would leave the country defenseless in a similar attack. Kim Hyun-uk serves as a professor of American Studies at the Korea National Diplomatic Academy in Seoul. He thinks that if North Korea thinks its leadership is not guaranteed, it will keep the nuclear program. North Korea has long justified the need for its nuclear program by pointing to what happened to Muammar Gaddafi in Libya. The longtime Libyan leader lost power and was killed by rebel forces just a few years after he agreed to give up his country's nuclear weapons. At the time, those forces were allied with the U.S. government and NATO forces. The U.S. and its allies justified their military action in Libya as a humanitarian intervention to prevent government forces from killing the civilian opposition. Without nuclear weapons, North Korean officials worry the U.S. could use the same humanitarian justification to intervene in North Korea. Kim Hyun-wook noted, "The U.S. can see North Korea as an autocratic state or human rights violator. And then it can remove Kim Jong-un if he does not have nuclear weapons. The Kim government could use the missile strikes in Syria to demand a step-by-step system to end the nuclear program as a way to guarantee security. That would include the reduction or removal of U.S. forces in Korea over time as part of the required security guarantees." Major U.S. allies Japan, South Korea, and Australia voiced strong support for military action to punish Syria's reported use of chemical weapons and to stop other countries from using them. China, however, objected to the strike by the U.S. and its allies before an investigation and without the agreement of the United Nations Security Council. I'm Mario Ritter.
A new report on the performance of American students found little or no improvement over the past year in mathematics and reading skills. The 2017 National Assessment of Educational Progress, also known as the nation's report card, was released April 10th. The report is based on tests of students across the United States. The Department of Education organized the testing. Among the report's findings was that only about one-third of eighth-grade students were considered proficient in reading and math. Generally, most eighth-graders are 13 or 14 years old. The Department of Education defines proficiency as solid academic performance. It says students who reach this level have a good knowledge of the subject and can use their knowledge in real-world situations. These students are also able to use analytical skills related to the subject. About 40% of fourth graders were found to be proficient in reading and math. The report found just 25% of 12th grade students had math proficiency, while 37% reached that level in reading. In science, 38% of fourth graders were rated proficient, while about 34% of eighth graders demonstrated proficiency.
Results of the latest report card were similar to other reports released in recent years. In a statement, U.S. Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos said the latest study shows that much can be done to improve the nation's education system. DeVos praised the state of Florida for being one bright spot in the latest report card. She said Florida students showed significant improvement in fourth and eighth grade math and eighth grade reading. Carissa Miller is head of the Council of Chief State School Officers. She told the Associated Press the assessment shows much work needs to be done to prepare students at all levels for college, careers, and life. It is clear we as a country must do better by all of our students, especially our lowest performing kids, she said.
A leading measure of student performance worldwide is the Program for International Student Assessment, or PISA. It is carried out by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, or OECD. The most recent study involved about 540,000 15-year-olds living in 72 nations and economies. The test includes a mix of multiple-choice questions and some requiring original answers. Students are tested in different subject areas. The students also provide information about themselves, their home, school, and learning experiences. PISA studies are completed every 3 years. The latest one, in 2015, found that U.S. students performed below students living in other economically developed nations. American students had an average test score of 497 in reading, which was just above the OECD average of 493. The U.S. score for math was 470 and 496 for science. The country with the highest PISA scores overall was Singapore. Students there had average test scores of 535 in reading, 564 in math, and 556 in science. The next highest scoring students were in Japan, Estonia, Taiwan, Finland, Macau, and Canada. Australia, Britain, Germany, the Netherlands, and Switzerland had scores averaging in the low 500s in the three subject areas.
PISA says it produces the reports to provide governments and educators around the world with information to help make decisions about education policies. However, planning and carrying out the tests is a complex process. Some educators and school activists have criticized PISA's testing and reporting methods. Critics have pointed out that in some countries, for example, China, PISA testing is only done in a few cities, such as Beijing and Shanghai. They argue this ignores China's rural areas, where the majority of students live, and where other studies have shown lower performance levels. PISA has also been accused of lacking neutrality. Critics say the findings generally support the economic role of public schools because it is part of the OECD.
In 2014, a group of educators wrote an open letter to PISA director Andreas Schleicher to express their concerns about the PISA system. Among the concerns were that PISA testing had led to an increase in standardized testing across the United States. This led to ratings of student and teacher performance from methods widely known to be imperfect, the group wrote. Miyako Ikeda is a senior analyst of PISA data. She says the organization completes careful research and experiments with trial questions in an effort to create the best possible testing. She added that the main goal of PISA is to go past measuring only performance levels in different subjects. Instead, she said, tests are designed to also show a student's problem-solving skills and readiness to use knowledge in real-world situations. I'm Brian Lynn.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.
Next, Jonathan Evans and Ashley Thompson bring us the American History Program, Making of a Nation.
The American nation began to expand west during the middle 1800s. People settled in the great open areas of the Dakotas, Utah, Wyoming, and California. The movement forced the nation to deal with great tribes of Native American Indians. The Indians had lived in the Western territories for hundreds of years. Settlers and cattle ranchers pushed the Indians out of their homelands. The result was a series of wars between the tribes and the federal government. Today, Ashley and I will tell this story.
At first, the United States government had just one policy to deal with the Indians. It was brutal. Whenever settlers wanted Indian land, the tribes were pushed farther west. If the Indians protested or tried to defend their land, they were destroyed with crushing force. By the middle 1800s, almost all the eastern Indians had been moved west of the Mississippi River. They were given land in Indian Territory in what is now the state of Oklahoma. The government described these Indians as civilized. This meant they were too weak to cause more trouble. Many agreed to follow the ways of the United States government.
The Indians of the Western grasslands were different. They refused to give up their way of life. These Plains Indians were always on the move because they hunted buffalo, the American bison. They followed great groups of the animals across the grassy plains. At that time, there were millions of these animals in the American West. The Indians of the plains depended on the buffalo for almost everything they needed. Many of them were fierce fighters. The Plains Indians did not want settlers crossing their hunting lands. They often tried to destroy the wagon trains carrying settlers to California and Oregon.
The United States Army was given the job of keeping peace. Soldiers were sent to build roads and forts in the Western Plains. They tried to protect the wagon trains from Indian attacks. They tried to keep settlers from invading Indian lands. There were many fights between the soldiers and the Plains Indians. The soldiers had more powerful weapons. They usually won.
Some Plains Indians tried to live peacefully with the settlers. One such group was part of the Sioux tribe, called Santee Sioux. It was the largest and most powerful group in the West. The Santee Sioux lived along the northeastern edge of the Great Plains in what is now the state of Minnesota. They signed treaties with the government, giving up 90% of their land. The Santee agreed to live in a small area. In exchange, the United States agreed to make yearly payments to the tribe. This made it possible for the Indians to buy food and other things from traders.
Trouble started, however, in the summer of 1862. The government was late giving the Indians their yearly payment. As a result, the Indians lacked the money to buy food. Traders refused to give the Indians credit to buy food. One trader said, "If they are hungry, let them eat grass." The Indians were hungry. Soon, their hunger turned to anger. Finally, the local Indian chief called his men together. He gave the orders for war. Early the next morning, the tribe attacked the trading stores. Many of the traders were killed, including the man who had insulted the Indians. He was found with his mouth filled with grass. The governor of Minnesota sent a force of state soldiers to stop the Indian revolt. The soldiers had artillery. They killed several hundred Indians in battle. They hanged several others. Soon, the revolt was over.
Trouble came next to parts of Colorado and Wyoming. This is where the Sioux Indians and the Cheyenne Indians lived. The chief of the Lakota Sioux tribe was named Red Cloud. The Indians fought bitterly to keep settlers out of their hunting grounds. After 2 years of fighting, with many deaths on both sides, the government decided the struggle was too costly. It asked for peace. The Sioux and the Cheyenne agreed. They were given a large area of land north of Wyoming in the Dakota Territory. They also were given the right to use their old hunting lands farther north. The government agreed to close a road used by settlers to cross the hunting grounds. And all soldiers were withdrawn from Sioux country.
Ended and peace came to the Sioux and the Cheyenne. With peace came a new United States policy towards Indians of the West. The government decided to put aside an area of land for each tribe. The land was called a reservation. Each tribe would live on its own reservation. Most of the reservations were in Indian Territory in what is now the state of Oklahoma. Other reservations were in Dakota, near the land of the Sioux.
The government believed it would cost less money and fewer lives to keep Indians on reservations. The Indians would be away from possible trouble with settlers. Instead of moving freely over the plains to hunt buffalo, the Indians would live in one place. They would receive food and money from the government. Officials came from Washington to explain this new policy to the Indians. A big meeting was held. Chiefs representing many tribes attended. The chiefs spoke, one after another, to the government officials.
All of the chiefs said they, too, wished to live in peace with the United States government. But many questioned the decision to move to reservations. One who did so was Chief Ten Bears of the Comanche tribe. He said, "There are things which you have said to me that I do not like. You said you wanted to put us on a reservation. You said you would build houses for us. I do not want your houses. I was born on the plains where the wind blows free and there is nothing to break the light of the sun. I was born where everything breathed a free breath. I want to die there, not within walls."
So the government and the Indians reached a compromise. The tribes were given reservations in Indian territory, but they were also given permission to hunt buffalo in a wide area south of the reservations. The Indians agreed to give up all their old lands. They agreed to live in peace on the reservations. In exchange, the United States promised to give the Indians all the food, clothing, and other things they needed. It also promised to give them schools and medical care.
The Indians were not happy with this agreement. They did not want to give up their old ways of living. However, they saw they had no choice. The government was too strong. They waited weeks, then months, for help to move to the new reservations. They could not understand the delay in carrying out the agreement. The delay was in Washington, D.C. Congress could not agree on how much money to spend on the Indians. So the lawmakers refused to approve the agreement. They left the situation unsettled. Again, Indians were forced to watch angrily as settlers began moving on to lands they had agreed to give up. As the settlers moved in, the buffalo and other animals left. The Indians had difficulty finding food.
Soldiers shared their food with the Indians. It was not enough. Western officials sent urgent messages to Washington asking for supplies for the Indians. No supplies could be sent until Congress approved the money to buy them. As before, some of the Indians became angry and refused to wait any longer. Their anger led to new fighting. In the end, it was a fight that failed to win back their land.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from America and around the world.